Today, on the exam room.
I kept going up on the dose of the medication because I was continuing to have these attacks. And when these attacks were real, they were about every 3 to 4 weeks. I would have 2 to 3 days where I just was in so much pain, I could barely put my shoe on. Mm. And I'm trying to run a full medical practice and be productive. And I have a vineyard as well, be productive in my vineyard. And I just couldn't do it. And I said, I have to make a change. And so I was reading things about the anti-inflammatory diet and how important it is to have a really good number of fruits and vegetables in your diet every day. And I just started to make the change and said, I have to get rid of all inflammatory products.
It was that bad, huh?
It was that bad.
Wow.
And so I made the change about 7 years ago this month. And within 3 weeks, I had not had an attack. And I said, okay, knock on wood. Let's see what's going on. By 6 weeks, not an attack. And I knew something was different in my body.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world in great cities like Roseville, California, Fayetteville, North Carolina, and La Paz, Bolivia. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 26 of season 7, number 525 overall. We are putting the spotlight on gout today and hearing from a doctor who was able to put a stop to crippling flare-ups that haunted him for years. We are talking years of pain up in smoke within just a matter of weeks. So what changed? Well, let's start with the type of protein he was eating. You see, Dr. Richard Schmidt was never a junk food junkie, and he wasn't big on any processed food, to tell you the truth. But there he was in his 40s and relegated to a wheelchair at one point because his knee had become so inflamed. And he was puzzled. He was so puzzled by what was going on. But then he did what any good doctor would do. He began to do some research, and he finds studies and gives his protein sources a big-time overhaul. And he realized that diseases, by their very nature, are based on inflammation. And if you can reduce that inflammation, you stand a pretty good chance of improving your condition. And that is exactly what Dr. Schmidt did. And within weeks, his attacks were gone. And they've stayed gone for 7 years and counting. He has gone from being super frustrated to becoming super excited about his future. And as a matter of fact, his only frustration now is that more people don't know about this. And that is what we are going to try to help with today, to get his story out there, spread the word, and bang a drum for more research, which is needed. But before we get into Dr. Schmidt's story, don't forget as well, we have two big live shows that are coming up. First, Saturday night, March 23rd in Toronto at the Enercare Center. Going to be going one-on-one with the great one, Dr. Michael Greger, as part of the Planted Expo. And then Tuesday night in Washington, D.C., March 26th at the National Press Club with Dr. Neil Barnard, as we settle in for the Power Foods Revolution to celebrate the release of his new book, The Power Foods Diet. And tickets for both shows can be purchased right now using the links in the episode notes. All right, it is time to get going on gout and bang that drum, make some noise, and share a story to create more attention when it comes to the connection of food and flare-ups of gout. Hear now the story of a doctor who kicked gout right out of his life, a conversation with Dr. Richard Schmidt.
Thanks for taking the time.
Glad to be here.
You have an incredible story. But before we get into that, I need to know what a reproductive endocrinologist actually does.
That's fair. So you can get all caught up in all the hormones and everything. But the bottom line is We just make babies. Yeah. We just make babies. Yeah.
Why not just go with the simple title like Dr. Baby Maker or something like that?
Yeah, you know, that works. I think it just needs a little bit more academia behind it. So
put the degree to use, right?
Yes.
Oh, man. But we are here as we record this at the International Conference on Nutrition and Medicine. And everyone who comes through these doors, Doc, has an incredible story. You certainly no exception to that. About a decade ago, if somebody told you you would be at a plant-forward nutrition conference, what would you have said?
No way. Absolutely no way. You know, I'm a foodie. I just need all my protein sources, and I just love to cook. And it just it wouldn't have been in my kind of thought process that I'd ever give up meat.
But 10 years ago, twist of fate, even though you're a doctor, have a firm understanding about what it takes to have a healthy body, you yourself started to have a number of health challenges.
I did. Of course, I thought that eating clean, whether that be fruits and vegetables, of course, clean meats, if there is such a thing, clean chicken, clean fish, that would keep me healthy. We don't learn a lot in med school. We don't get that nutrition education. And so what little bit we got, maybe 15 minutes of 4 years of med school, I try to take that and just kind of learn on the fly as I was practicing medicine, and slowly started to educate myself and realize that maybe my dietary patterns were a part of my health issues. My biggest one was familial gout. My dad had had it, and I don't even think he knew he had it when he was alive. And I realized I'm having this terrible pain in my big toe, and it's recurring. And I couldn't believe that I was in my 40s and I had really bad gout. Mm. And so, of course, I went to the doctor and I was put on medications. And so the medications that I had were pretty benign, but they still had side effects. And I just kept going up on the dose of the medication because I was continuing to have these attacks. And when these attacks were real, they were about every 3 to 4 weeks, I would have 2 to 3 days where I just was in so much pain, I could barely put my shoe on. Mm. And I'm trying to run a full medical practice and be productive. And I have a vineyard as well, be productive in my vineyard. And I just couldn't do it. And I said, I have to make a change. And so I was reading things about the anti-inflammatory diet and how important it is to have a really good number of fruits and vegetables in your diet every day. And I just started to make the change. And I actually, not started, I went cold turkey because I just said I have to get rid of all inflammatory products.
It was that bad, huh?
It was that bad.
Wow.
And so I made the change about 7 years ago this month. And within 3 weeks, I had not had an attack. And I said, okay, knock on wood. Let's see what's going on. By 6 weeks, not an attack, and I knew something was different in my body. Not only was that going away, my asthma that I had for years was improving, and I was using my inhaler much less. And I'm like, okay, there's something going on here. Mm. And by 8 weeks, I said, I think I'm going to start decreasing my gout medications, and I started to go down on that. And now 7 years later, haven't had a gout attack, and I'm just blown away by the power of nutrition.
So let's talk about what your diet was, though. I mean, you mentioned you thought you were eating these clean, healthy meats, but can you walk us through what the daily menu would have looked like when that first gout attack happened?
Absolutely. So I did have a garden. I always had a vegetable garden. So I did have nice, you know, fruits and vegetables in the house, but I was of the mindset that I needed all this protein. So in the morning, okay, let's get a bagel. Let's put some lox on it. Let's get nice, clean lox. And let's have, you know, some eggs with that too. I had chickens. So what could be better than having my own fresh eggs? And so I'd have some sort of egg sandwich for breakfast. And then it comes to lunch. That's going to get a nice, clean chicken salad. Plenty of chicken,
right?
A little bit of salad, but have a nice chicken salad. And then move into dinner, where I always would source my meal with the protein first, protein being animal protein. Mm-hmm. And that was the center of the plate. And then I would decorate it with some vegetables and, you know, a salad, and but clean in my mind.
Yeah.
Just clean. And so right. Whether that be grass-fed beef, whether that was, you know, cage-free chickens or, you know, free-range chickens, I just thought I was doing the right thing.
Yeah. I hear you talk about that, and I think the average person would look at that and say, wow, you know, he eats pretty healthy. That's not the standard American diet that we talk about that's so rife with fast food, pizza, burgers, maybe Taco Bell, like all of that stuff. You weren't eating any of that, and still you had this issue. Yeah,
minimal processed food. I love my chips and salsa, but other than that, it was really minimal processed food. I thought it was an extremely clean diet.
Mm-hmm. So did you know then right away when your toe started to ache that that was probably what was occurring? Or did you think like maybe I had like somehow jammed it up? Were you an athlete?
Total denial. Yes, I was running. I was, you know, extremely active. And I'm like, okay, this is really weird. I'm getting this consistent pain, shifting toes. Sometimes it'd be the right big toe, sometimes the left big toe. And then one episode, I actually was visiting my nephew in Japan, and I literally got this knee pain. And I was in a wheelchair coming home from Japan, because we had a ton of seafood and meats over there when I didn't correlate. And I couldn't even walk. I was at LAX, and I was in a wheelchair getting off the plane. I'm like, okay, my life is really messed up. I got to do something here. And I'm like, I got to get an MRI, figure out what I did to my knee. I must have, you know, torn an anterior or posterior cruciate. I was just like all just bamboozled by this. And so lo and behold, I started to put it together. And I'm like, wait a minute. This resolved in 3 days on its own, 4 days on its own, just by, you know, kind of going away and hydrating. And I'm like, this is gout.
Wow. I mean, to be in your 40s at this point,
I was
young, healthy doctor. Yeah. I mean, especially being a doctor. I mean, I would imagine like there's like almost a little bit of embarrassment there, confusion. Like, how are you feeling about this?
Yeah.
Be honest with me.
Well, you know, in medicine, it's one thing to diagnose patients. It's a totally different thing to diagnose yourself. I mean, you don't get those diseases that you read about. You don't. Well, you do. And that's what I had to realize is that, okay, I have been doctoring myself and trying to figure out how this perfect, you know, healthy lifestyle could lead me to anything like that. And I was just in denial. I just said, no, it couldn't be me. It couldn't be me. And it was me.
Is that a common thing for doctors to kind of feel like you're bulletproof in some regard?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Once you know about the diseases, that gives you a pass card not to get the disease. Well, it doesn't work that way.
So... Yeah, unfortunately, right? So now you've got gout, and what is the typical course of treatment for somebody when they're diagnosed? Like, let's take the nutrition intervention off the table for a second. If a patient goes into the office, what's the doctor typically going to prescribe?
Okay, so one of the main medications that's been used for, you know, decades is allopurinol, a low purinol. So lower your purinols, because it's purines that are the product that of the actual gout crystal formation. And so they just want to lower your purines. And so they do tell you about diet. They want you to lower your purine intake, which is meats and beer. I wasn't a big beer drinker, but they do say alcohol, just because that can dehydrate you and
right.
cause problems to get worse. But yeah, they want to get you started on medication, and they want to keep going on the medication, and they give you a backup medication called colchicine, which basically helps you in the immediate attack. And it goes to your kind of gout crystals and it starts to break them down. But if you take too much, you get massive diarrhea. So, I mean, it's just no fun.
Hey, you can't win, man.
No.
You can't win. And what's long-term prognosis typically for somebody with gout?
So with repetitive attacks, the joint gets distorted. There's something called a gouty tophus, which is just like a kind of almost like a tumor that starts to grow in the area that you're getting in. It's just loaded with these urate crystals and just this kind of disease state. And the joint starts to deform completely. It's really, really disturbing.
That doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
No.
Is there a risk for amputation or anything like that? If
things get
they
bad? Can surgically try to make it look better, but you're going to have a joint that doesn't work well.
Mm.
So, and if it's in your foot, that's gonna affect your whole life.
So when you start to do this research and you're putting the nutrition puzzle together that comes with this, are you reading books? Are you looking at documentaries? Going to PubMed and just pulling up copious amounts of studies?
Yeah, you know, I know how to read a study. Let me just figure this out. And so, you know, I'd go and I'd read the studies and I'm like, okay. Well, and there was mixed studies, you know, that many years ago. It's just, it wasn't consistent that, you know, you go on a... And it's still not now if you do a real good search of gout and, you know, the dietary recommendations, it doesn't recommend whole food plant-based. There's an occasional article about it, and it's just, it's a crime that it's not brought up. And so I was doing my deep dives, and I started to come up with, inflammatory foods I need to stay away from.
It's a pretty common condition though, right? Gout?
Very common. More common in men than women, but I mean, it's extremely common and going up worldwide.
So I wonder why there is not more attention to that. We hear about, you know, the heart healthy diets, we hear about diets for cancer, but if gout is so common and it's driven primarily by diet in a lot of cases, why wouldn't there be more attention put on that?
It's a very good question. Yeah, I think
Well, you don't have the answer for that today?
No, I want to be the advocate. I want to be the poster child for this. Yeah. I really do.
But it's puzzling to me, though, because even when, and this is not a knock necessarily on, you know, the big cancer groups or the heart groups, but even when you look at those diets, there's still a lot of things on there that if you look at other studies, they're like, well, you really shouldn't be eating processed meat here. You really shouldn't be eating a whole lot of dairy here. You know, as a matter of fact, we know that that increases the risk of these particular conditions. And so, like, when we're talking about gout-healthy diets, I would think that unfortunately we could get into a situation also where these types of foods that would cause the inflammation and trigger a flare-up might also land on the list. That's got to be a little bit of a concern as well.
Absolutely. You just realize, you know, as you go through this whole kind of adventure, I'd say, of becoming a doctor and then taking care of patients, that the body wants to be healing itself. And if we don't give it the tools to heal itself, then all this disease is going to come up, because all disease is really based on inflammation.
Yeah.
And if we can remove that inflammation out of the body, we can heal every aspect of disease, almost every aspect of disease.
So let's talk about this timetable here. When you come back from Japan, that really bad episode that you had, you're in the wheelchair. You said, what, did it take you 3 days to recover from that? Or how long were you really hobbled there?
I mean, like I said, I couldn't even walk at LAX. And 3 days later, I was walking normally. And I'm like, okay, this is not an orthopedic problem.
Right.
This is something that happened and went away. What could have done this? And then I just started to put it together between my toe. Typically, it's the toe joint, the first, you know, metatarsal. And that's what you get in a gout attack. But it can go to other joints.
Right.
And that was the first time I had another joint involved. And when I started putting it all together, I just said, okay, yeah. And then I remember my dad had his tennis shoe with it cut out over his big toe so he could put his shoes on. I'm like, holy cow, my dad had gout. I didn't put it together.
Wow. Until,
and he had long been gone from colon cancer,
right.
Another inflammatory meat-caused disease. I just put it all together and I said, holy cow, this is gout.
Yeah. So how big was your dietary change? I mean, you mentioned that there were a lot of indulgences on that trip, but like, did you come home that day and you were like, I'm going to eat an entirely plant-based diet? Or did you just kind of go back to what it was you have been eating back home? And just by making that level of change, you saw this big improvement.
So, I mean, it was kind of this learning curve. I did the deep dive. I started learning about, you know, the inflammatory foods. And I started to shift, but I was still getting attacks. I could space them out. I could be proactive and drink, you know, 5, 6, 7 liters of water a day to try to minimize, you know, keep myself hydrated. But I just knew I couldn't go on like that. And so that's when I decided to go cold turkey.
So, I mean, what kind of toll did this take on your personal life at that point?
I mean, work was, I mean, and, you know, I was at the point where I was you know, my kids were getting older, but I was still doing a lot of coaching. You know, they played soccer and other sports, and I was very involved in, you know, their activities. And I had to limit myself. Mm-hmm. I had to call in help on some of these coaching events because, I mean, I couldn't walk. So it was super frustrating. And I knew it wasn't the life that I wanted to live.
I would imagine. Again, especially, you know, young, healthy dad, doctor dad. You shouldn't be the one that's in the wheelchair or hobbling around, man.
No. That was a shocker.
What did your kids say, like, to see you like that? Was that scary for them?
No, they looked at it and they're like, is that something we're going to get? And, you know, a kid, you know, I care about you, but I care about myself too.
Yeah.
And so they were, you know, is that definitely something I'm going to have? And I'm like, no. It's, you know, we're going to figure this out.
Right on.
So, but yeah, they were super concerned.
Right on.
Yeah.
How surprised were you, though, as you started to do this research at just how strong the connection between gout and diet actually was?
Again, since the literature does not have a lot of data on this, I was pretty shocked that nobody had really taken this on as an area of research. And I still feel that I would like to get involved in something like that and do a really good random control trial and just figure this out and
get
things answered once and for all.
Right. But I guess in particular with your case, I mean, what you saw versus, I guess, anecdotally, what you're experiencing at that point, you're like, holy moly.
Yeah. I was blown away.
Yeah. I bet. But it wasn't just gout that you saw improvements with as well.
No. Of course, asthma can have a huge inflammatory component. It always was worse for me in the spring with pollen and everything, but I still had my inhaler at all times and I wasn't using it. And that was actually late spring that I came back and I realized as I started to make changes, I was getting slight improvement. Of course, when I made the full change, I mean, I haven't used my inhaler in almost 5 years now, you know?
Wow.
So my asthma dramatically improved because of my diet.
Do you still carry it with you just as a little safety net or?
It's all expired. I don't even have it. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I have it there, but I never use it. So.
Who needs that stuff? No, so. I mean, that's gotta be a pretty freeing feeling, right?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Just the exercise tolerance just went through the roof. I could, you know, exercise so much better. I felt so much stronger.
I mean, you look fit as a fiddle today. How often are you running?
So I will do some sort of aerobic activity, you know, 5-6 times a week.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Look at those guns right there. You downplay it, dude. But yeah, you're jacked. Come on now.
No.
Don't even lie to us, sir.
Okay,
you're
very
jacked,
kind,
y'all.
Chuck.
He is jacked.
Yeah.
Silly guy. Telling me to downplay it. No. But even like you love to grow things, right? We were joking before the interview, whether it's growing babies or growing grapes. Like you love just growing things. And if you're growing grapes, you're going to be spending a lot of time outdoors, walking around in the vineyards. I mean, just to be able to have that freedom to go out there and walk and see everything and just not be in this crippling pain, that too has to be a pretty amazing feeling.
It is amazing because I remember it's a hillside vineyard and I remember getting an attack and I said, okay, let me just put on my boots and they'll be acting like a cast and I'll be able to hobble up and down. I mean, this is a steep hillside. I'll be able to hobble up and down the hill and, you know, do what I need to do, prune or whatever needs to be done at that time. It was so painful.
Yeah.
It was so painful. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this. This is my dream to be able to have a vineyard as I retire from medicine. And I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this if this keeps up.
Robbed you of the joy of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man. But let me ask you, because I'm sure that a lot of people are kind of wondering this now as they watch and they listen. Alcohol and the connection with gout, is there, like, could alcohol potentially be a trigger? What do we know there?
So, I mean, as much as I'd like to sugarcoat it because I'm a winemaker, alcohol is bad. I mean, alcohol causes cancer. Alcohol generally is bad for us. Now, are there some studies that would show that you get a benefit from like red wine and stuff like that? Yeah, there's some evidence that you can get some benefits from that. I'm not going to go heavy into that, but alcohol itself dehydrates you. And as soon as you get dehydrated, any condition that has inflammation without that water in your system is going to become worse, whether it's asthma, whether it's gout, heart disease. I mean, you need to be well hydrated, and the actual alcohol dehydrating you is what is going to cause the problem. You know,
how do you balance
beer is
it?
Worse.
Is it? Beer is worse. Okay.
Because it has purines. And so that is the culprit. But they even said that, oh yeah, red wine is bad. And several studies actually even showed that red wine could decrease gout attacks. So I did this really deep dive.
I have no doubt, being a doctor and a winemaker, you were the guy to ask.
Yeah. So as long as you're hydrating well and everything, you know, a small amount of good red wine.
Right.
Is okay.
I got you. So, and the name of your vineyard is?
Moose Mountain Vineyard.
Out in California.
Named after my rescue dog.
Oh.
Yeah. Moose is not the big moose. It's my 105-pound rescue dog.
Well, that's still a healthy-sized dog, Doc.
It's a moose.
Yeah.
It's a moose.
Yeah. That's a mini moose. Mini. Yeah. Man, yeah, that's great. How long have you had this, the vineyard?
The vineyard now, I planted the first vines almost 15 years ago.
Nice.
So, yeah.
You loving it?
Oh, so much.
Yeah.
Like I said, I love growing things.
Yeah. And
when you can turn those grapes into a product, like a really nice glass of red wine, I specialize in Bordeaux style wines, and it's just so delicious.
Yeah. You get the twinkle in your eye when you talk about that.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, man. That's kind of your happy place. But is Moose still around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's doing all right. Yeah,
he's a little older, but he's on a whole food plant-based diet too, and he's doing well, you know?
Good for Moose.
Yeah.
Good for Moose. What does your diet look like today? You went from having those clean meats, but what's the ultra clean plant-based diet looking like today?
Okay, so a lot of stuff comes out of the garden.
Give it up.
Almost all my vegetables. So, and I rotate a garden. I actually have an aquaponics, so I can have a garden year round, even though it's California. I mean, you can have, you know, a garden year round in California, but I'll shift it from my cruciferous vegetables in the winter, and then I move into, you know, kind of my peas and beans and stuff in the spring. And, you know, you want to have variety. So I have always a killer pepper and tomato garden, and, you know, making my own hot sauces and everything like that. So it's just, I just love pulling stuff out of the garden. I have a citrus orchard. I have an avocado orchard. I just want to grow my own food, and I don't want to put any pesticides on my food. So this is completely organic farming, and it's just amazing. So besides that, I'm the bean guy. I have
the bean
I
guy.
Would say, yeah, between lentils and beans, I probably have somewhere between 6 and 8 servings a day. That brings me to a whole other issue that I had, because I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and that's where I started my venture on legumes.
Yeah. So, Yeah. And your Crohn's today, I'm sure you're doing a lot better too.
Non-existent. They did the scopes and they can't find any evidence of Crohn's.
Wow.
Yeah. They said that you need to go on biologics, Remicade, and you need to be on this. And I had that diet switch, and the doc is like, no, this wasn't because of your diet. You got lucky. And I'm like, no, it wasn't luck. This was a dietary change that got rid of my Crohn's disease.
So you had gout, asthma, and Crohn's. Man, you had the trifecta, bro.
Kind of. Well, and
not a good trifecta. But wait, there's more.
There's more. And this is genetic. I found out I had celiacs too.
Get out of town.
Yeah. So I'm one of those real gluten-free people.
Right.
I need to be gluten-free.
Right, right.
So I had things that could really, really make my life miserable, and my life is far from miserable.
Were all of these things happening at the same time? The gout, the asthma, the Crohn's?
Overlapped. They overlapped. Yeah.
Wow.
It was kind of crazy.
Bro. Yeah.
I know. It's like, is this what getting close to 50 looks like?
Wow. That is rough, man. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But look at you today. Feeling good. And
yeah.
Okay. Did you do a deep dive into like Crohn's literature as well? No?
Of course.
Oh, I figured you would have. I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have it all chronicled.
Yeah.
I have every little aspect of what I need to know about asthma, Crohn's, gout. But I've done it with other diseases too, because I'm a fertility doc. So I'm counseling my patients about the benefit of a whole food plant based diet to reduce inflammation. And endometriosis is a huge problem for women and fertility. And getting on a whole food plant-based diet absolutely reduces their chance of that inflammatory component causing infertility.
So you do talk to your patients about
every
that?
Every single patient.
Are they surprised when that comes up in conversation?
A little bit. They're like, what, 10 to 12 servings of fruits and vegetables a day? And I'm like, that's the minimum. That's the minimum. And if you don't get, for women, 25 grams of fiber, for men, 37 grams, I said, you're not doing your gametes well. Gametes, sperm and eggs. You're not doing your sperm and eggs well if you don't get on this diet. Mm. So I tell them that first visit.
Mm. I've interviewed people on this show, this very show. Catherine Lawrence Ireland pops into mind, where she was just famously addicted to Kraft macaroni and cheese in the blue boxes. And I mean, her friends, even when she I think maybe it was when she transitioned out of the army, just gave her so many boxes of it, and she would just eat it day after day after day. And her endometriosis got so bad that they were going to perform surgery. But then, coincidentally, 6 weeks prior, she begins eating a plant-based diet. And when she goes for the operation that morning, the doctor opens her up and says, it's a miracle, it's cured. All that was left was scarring, but like the hysterectomy was never performed. And she went on to have happy, healthy children. Unbelievable.
You know, there's a lot, unfortunately, that the drug companies don't want to hear, and they would much rather have there be these needs for these medications and these treatments. And if I have a patient that can get pregnant through dietary changes, that's my biggest win. I'm not concerned about them not being my patient. I'm concerned about them being a parent.
Yeah.
And if they can make it in a natural way to parenthood, I am hats off to them. I'm there to help them if they can't, but I just want them to consider diet as a really strong intervention.
That's got to be a really cool feeling to help a woman or a family conceive when they've been trying and trying and trying, right? I mean,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some of my patients bring back their college graduates to meet me again.
Whoa.
And that's really where I'm like, am I really that old?
Oh, double-edged sword, you're funny, man.
I've been doing this that long. But, you know, I had one that came back, and she just graduated from Cambridge, and she was a patient from overseas. And just to meet this girl, she's just beautiful, brilliant woman. And I'm like, wow, I was holding that little embryo in my hands when I did that transfer. It just blows me away.
That's so cool.
The whole process.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. You talk to all your patients about nutrition, or do they have
now
to be open to it? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Wait, they're going to hear it whether they want to hear it or not. I just gauge how forceful I want to be.
Gotcha.
I don't want to turn them off with the conversation. I want to open the door, and then if I can open it more, depending on their reception, than I do.
Yeah, I think this is a great place to wrap up the conversation. Whether it's in this instance or so many others, it's always, how can I talk to my friends and my family about this? How do I talk to the people who I care about in terms of their own nutrition and what it is that they should be eating? It is a delicate conversation, and I maintain that somebody has to be ready and willing to hear the information. How do you gauge it? Is it just a vibe that they give off, or what's your barometer?
You know, it is, and I try to target what I feel is important to them. Maybe it's their health. Maybe, I mean, longevity, being around like a patient that really is wanting to be a mother. I focus on that, but I also say, you know, with your hemoglobin A1C being elevated, I want you to be a mother, but I want you to be a grandmother.
Mm.
And what sometimes when they hear that, the light bulb goes off. And so I just try to get the angle that I feel will be best for them to be receptive. And I'm not going to push it down their throat, but I'm going to be their biggest supporter if they decide to head down that path and guide them along the way.
All right. My final question to you is along those same lines. You know, how would Dr. Schmidt today talk to Dr. Schmidt 10 plus years ago? How would you begin that conversation?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And would he have been receptive at any point? I mean,
I think my love of my kids and the field that I'm in, I think I would have angled it about, hey, you know, your dad died at a young age. Do you want that for your grandkids? Do you want that for your family? You may want to consider some of your dietary practices if you want to be around for those incredible grandkids and maybe great grands. And so I think I would have done the family angle because it's so central to who I am.
All right, man. Well, that's a great way to leave it, man. Congratulations on your transformation. Looking at you today, you would never know that there was struggle one. You look great. Well, you sound
very
great.
Very kind, Chuck.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, sharing my story with you.
It's been truly my pleasure. And thanks also for everything that you've done with us here at the Physicians Committee, man.
They are dear to my heart.
As you are to ours, my friend. Thank you very much.
So I found a couple of studies about gout and dietary influence to share. And much like Dr. Schmidt was saying during the interview, this one study comes from 2015, and it finds that protein coming from poultry and fish may increase the risk of developing gout. So this comes to us from the Journal of Arthritis and Rheumatology. And here, researchers are looking at the diets of more than 63,000 people. And the findings show that those eating the most chicken and fish have the highest risk of getting gout. However, those getting the most protein from sources like soy and legumes have the lowest risk. And then another study from 8 years later in 2023, this one examines the amount of uric acid in the diets of people who are participating in the China Health and Nutrition Survey. And remember, uric acid is what causes gout, as Dr. Schmidt was explaining to us. So researchers in this 2023 study say that the people who ate a plant-based diet containing a lot of cereals and vegetables, starchy root vegetables in particular, were able to reduce the amount of uric acid in their blood, and thus the risk of gout goes down. And they also say that no other diet that they looked at here was able to match that benefit. And in fact, uric acid levels actually increased in the diets containing a lot of milk and eggs. So interesting findings there, and there are links to both studies for you right now in the episode notes if you would like to do a deeper dive. And I've also done a show with Dr. Neil Barnard as well, one that contained information on the best foods for treating gout naturally. And so if you would like to watch that, give it a listen, you can go back in our archives to do that. And I've also dropped a link for you to view that on YouTube as well. And speaking of shows with Dr. Barnard, don't forget March 26th, Washington, D.C., the National Press Club, live and in person, a very special episode of The Exam Room with Dr. Barnard, Chef Dustin Harder, Stephanie Ignafo from Plantspiration, and we are calling that the Power Foods Revolution. All about weight loss in this case. And March 26th happens to be the same day that Dr. Barnard's new book, The Power Foods Diet, comes out. And everyone with a ticket gets a free copy of the book as well. So that is a deal that just cannot be beat. So join us March 26th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Tickets can be yours, pcrm.org/events, or click the link in the episode notes. Also, few days before that, Saturday, March 23rd at the Enercare Center in Toronto, I'm going to be sitting down with Dr. Michael Greger and talking about unlocking longevity and his new book, How Not to Age. Plus, I'll be sticking around and speaking the next day at the Planted Expo, so just can't wait for two big days in Toronto, the 23rd and 24th of March, and you can get tickets to both right now at plantedlife.com or click the link in the episode notes. And if you haven't already done so, you feel like you've raised your health IQ by a point or two today, go ahead and pay forward what you have learned. Follow The Exam Room by the Physicians Committee on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is that you get your shows. And when you do that, please also leave a 5-star rating and a nice review. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Richard Schmidt for being here and inspiring us with a great story as we continue to raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.